Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
Pleasure to have you with us today on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. During the time he was a professor and provost at Caltech, I had the pleasure of speaking with Stephen Koonin on Air Talk, and since his time of leaving Caltech, he's gone on to be a member of the Obama administration, where he was Undersecretary for Science in the Department of Energy, and he's now professor at NYU in New York City, theoretical physicist Dr. Stephen Koonin. Professor, good to have you with us again. It's been way too long.
Yes, great to be talking with you, Larry, and of course to be in Pasadena, even virtually. I think it's probably been about 17 or 18 years since we've talked.
It's been a long, long time. I appreciate it. So let's talk about your new book, Unsettled, What Climate Science Tells Us, What It Doesn't, and Why It Matters. You describe a significant gap between what the science indicates and the way it's reported on or even debated in policy arenas. First of all, what do we know about the state of the climate?
Well, we certainly know that the globe on average has warmed about a degree centigrade, or roughly 2 degrees Fahrenheit, over the last century. On the other hand, when you start to look at other things associated with the climate, you don't see very much change at all. So, for example, there's no detectable human influence on hurricanes over the last century. And heat waves in the U.S. are no more common than they were in 1900 and haven't been going up for the last 60 years. And so you look at that and you say, yes, the globe is warming, but all these other bad things that people believe are going on just ain't so.
Well, how do we end up then with the reporting that, a hurricane season, or here in California with the spate of terrible, deadly, and destructive wildfires? People argue that it is that warming responsible for the drying, for the long droughts that we've experienced recently, and that feeds those fires. How do you respond to those?
Well, you know, there is a long chain of telephone, I like to say, or game of telephone that goes on between the observational data and the original research. And finally, it goes through the assessment reports that the UN and the US government prepares, the summaries of those assessment reports, which are largely written by governments, not scientists, and then to the media, and then ultimately to the public. And there are ample opportunity for mischief or misinformation along that chain. With respect to the particular things that you mentioned, hurricanes and then wildfires, first of all, people have to understand that there's a lot of variability in the weather. Weather is not climate. Climate is a multi-decade average of weather. And so if you tell me one hurricane season is particularly active, that's fine, but you have to tell me what happened over the last 10 or 15 years if you want to talk about climate. Wildfires are even more complicated because they involve natural forces and also what humans do. You might be interested to know that according to work done by NASA, that globally wildfires have decreased by about 25% since 2003, and that globally 2020 was the least active season on record. Now, of course, we had terrible fires in California and Australia. Climate may well have played a role. Whether it was human influences on climate remains to be seen, but certainly there are human influences on forest management and where we develop housing and let people live that also play a major role.
Could, though, the reason that we've seen over the past couple of decades a decrease in wildfires globally be there's just been so much more development that there's less acreage to burn?
Yes. So, well, it's not so much that there's less acreage to burn. If you look at wildfires in the U.S. West, if you go back to 1900, there's a tremendous amount of forest that was burned every year. That was entirely natural. And then starting in the 50s, I believe, there was a, maybe even earlier, there was a policy put into place to suppress wildfires. And you and I are certainly old enough to remember Smokey the Bear.
Oh, yes.
And that caused a dramatic drop in wildfires, even as the globe warmed during that time. We hit a minimum in wildfires around the 1980s, and they have been slowly creeping up, but nowhere near the extent that we had in 1900. Drought and aridity play some role in all of this. How much of that is human and how much is natural is to be determined, but certainly human activities have a much bigger influence on fires than climate does.
Just one of the things we hear from those who've been in the firefighting or environmental field with forests for many years is that the types of fires we're seeing, the speed in which they move, just the intensity of those fires is different than what we saw in wildfires in the past. And so isn't it not a logical extension that 1 degree increase that we have seen in temperature and associated droughts that we've seen could be a contributing factor to this?
Well, it's certainly a contributing factor, but again, how much is natural and how much is man-made is to be determined. Because if you look at the record of drought in the Southwest over the last 1,000 years, and we have that kind of information from tree rings and so on, there have been great droughts in the past. And so before we start saying, aha, this is human-caused climate change, I think you've really got to understand just how naturally variable the droughts were in the Southwest.
We're talking with New York University professor, theoretical physicist, Dr. Stephen Koonin. He was vice president at Caltech and provost for almost a decade at Caltech. He also is member of the National Academy of Sciences, American Academy of Arts and Sciences, and actually was involved in an effort by, I believe it was the Academy, to come up with a public statement about sort of where our understanding of climate science. Is that what started you on this journey of doing greater research on the modeling and what underlies our state of climate science?
Yes, that's correct, Larry. I was asked the end of 2013, the beginning of 2014, by the American Physical Society, not the National Academies, to help them recast a public statement that they had made 7 or 8 years earlier on climate science. And I decided, because, you know, we're physicists, we don't take anybody's word for it. I decided I and a small committee were going to dig deeply into the science, and we convened a workshop with 3 consensus climate scientists and 3 skeptics, and we sat and talked for a day. And I emerged from that workshop really in some ways unsettled, because I found that the science was nowhere near as solid as I had been led to believe.
And
the models give, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask you about the models. So what did you find about the climate modeling on which a significant part of the science is based?
Well, first of all, this is a very hard task to do the climate modeling. We're trying to understand the climate system, which is not only the atmosphere, but maybe even more importantly, the oceans and the ice and the biosphere. We're trying to understand that when it has so many different scales, from the small scale turbulence in a thunderhead all the way up to the big global circulations that we see in the jet stream, for example. Trying to describe all of that in a computer is very much more than just physics, as some people say. There's much more art than science in it. And the couple dozen models that the world uses give results that differ dramatically from each other, and also from the observations on the scales that we care about, namely the half a degree or degree per century. And so the models are at best a very pale reflection of what might be going on.
Don't the models, though, generally point in the direction of bad things happening as a result of the warming of the planet? They may have, you know, very different degrees of outcome because the choices of inputs can be different in that sort of art that you're talking about that is a part of the science. But isn't it pretty clear where we're headed based on the totality of those models?
Well, you know, the models say we might warm a couple degrees, okay, by the end of the century, a couple more degrees, one and a half. If you then look at other places in the report where they talk about the net economic impact of a warming of, let's say, 2 or 3 degrees, it turns out to be a couple percent of GDP at the end of the century. And so what they're saying is that if our economy grows as expected, let's say in the US, our economy right now is 20 trillion. If it were to grow at 2% a year till the end of the century, it would be something like 80 trillion. And what the models are saying, or the analysis says in the reports, is that instead of being 80 trillion at the end of the century, it would be something like 76 trillion, okay? And so it says right there in the report that at least for economies, climate is only one relatively small factor, and that there are many other things, trade, technology, et cetera, that determine economic well-being. So that we're headed for a certain disaster? No, I don't think so.
We'll continue with physicist Dr. Stephen Koonin, professor at NYU, author of the new book Unsettled, What Climate Science Tells Us, What It Doesn't, and Why It Matters. He's a member of the Obama administration as Undersecretary for Science in the U.S. Department of Energy. He's also someone who's written extensively on computer modeling in science. It's been a field with which he's been involved for many, many years. If you have questions for him, we're at 866-893-KPECC. Back in 1 minute. Fresh Air is coming up just a few minutes here on KPECC at noon. Terry's guest today, Nicole Lynn Lewis, the new memoir, Pregnant Girl, about being a homeless pregnant teen with an abusive boyfriend. And then Nicole founded Generation Hope, which assists young parents. You'll hear her story on Fresh Air with Terry Gross at noon. Right now, we're talking with NYU professor, physicist Stephen Koonin. He's professor of theoretical physics, was at Caltech for many years, vice president and provost for nearly a decade at Caltech when I first met him, went on to be a member of the Obama administration as undersecretary for science, and is author of this new book, Unsettled, What Climate Science Tells Us, What It Doesn't, and Why It Matters. One of the biggest concerns that we're hearing is over sea level rise and the melting of global caps, what we're seeing on these major ice shelves where the pace of the melt and the calving has accelerated. So what of this and the warming of the planet's effect on that, Professor?
Yeah. So, but I wanted to make one general point about the book before I talk about sea level rise.
Yeah.
And that, you know, almost everything in the book is not my science. It is the consensus science as expressed in the UN and US government reports. And there are many things in those reports that are either obscured or in some cases left out entirely, but they're there in the literature, that have not made it through to the popular consciousness. And I wrote the book in order to try to expose some of those, to educate people, because I think if we're to make the best decisions in society, people need to be fully informed about what we know and what we don't know.
All right.
Now, let me talk about sea level rise. You know, first of all, it's hard to measure the rise of sea level because the Earth is very big and we don't have measurements everywhere. We do have tide gauges at a number of places that have been measuring for a century or so. And what we see over the last 30 years is that the rate of rise is about 3 millimeters a year. Now, that, for people who aren't used to thinking about the metric system, I can translate that. And that is a little bit less than a foot a century, okay? So it goes up 1 foot every century, or about an inch every decade. Of course, that's the global average. It's more in some places, it's less in others. Here in New York City, where there's a tide gauge at the Battery, not very far away from the Statue of Liberty, the tip of Manhattan, it's been going up at just about that rate. Now, if you look back a couple hundred years ago, it was less. The rate was less. It was on average maybe 1.5 millimeters a year, 1.2 millimeters a year. But what is interesting is that if you look at the early part of the 20th century, it was rising at almost the same rate. It was high, and then it went low, down to about a millimeter a year, or maybe even a little bit less, and then went up again. So that there are large natural oscillations or fluctuations in the global sea level. And unless we understand those, it's very difficult to say, aha, that's human influences and that's the melting of the ice caps.
Well, I was just going to say, one of the things, though, that I hear climate scientists deeply concerned about is the potential for acceleration, that there is, as the climate warms and this happens, that you then start to have a significant increase in the pace of that. And that's the problem, is less what we're experiencing right now than the anticipated increase in the extent of these effects of global warming. And that by that point, mitigation measures are not going to be effective.
Yeah, well, you know, I think whatever warming we've got is already in the pipeline, and adding is not going to make that much difference. So if it's going to melt, it's going to melt, I would say. The Arctic is highly variable. Greenland was melting as rapidly 80 years ago as it is today, at least according to a paper that some folks at JPL published some months ago. And so I think we have to understand that variability before we say we're on a downslope and all the ice is going to melt. And even if it did, it's going to take centuries for that to become significant.
Well, I think, obviously the concern of climate scientists is the belief that we need to act now to avoid, what happens after most of us alive are gone and the consequences of that down the road. Professor, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it very much. Stephen Koonin, Unsettled, What Climate Science Tells Us, What It Doesn't, and Why It Matters. He was Undersecretary for Science in the Obama administration, former Vice President Provost at Caltech, and now Professor of Physics at New York University. Stay tuned. Fresh Air with Terry Gross comes up next here on 89.3 KPECC. Of course, tomorrow on the program, we'll be bringing you the very latest on COVID-19, other important topics as well, right here in Southern California. As always, with all the choices available, thank you so much for joining us here on Air Talk. Have a terrific afternoon.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.